Department reports and presentations, personnel update. Oh, just in time.
Yeah.
Wow, look at him walking right in.
I feel like this is making an entrance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A good timing.
Appreciate your efficiency.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Thanks for the introduction. I can pass these around if you want to. It has been emailed out, but we have, a new accounting specialist starting next week. We have two new limited term in the parks individuals that started on the 5th and two maintenance worker ones in the sewer that started on the 1st. We had a conditional letter out to a community court case manager, but since I wrote this up, we do have a hire that's been accepted starting October 2nd. And that's a limited term position funded through, I believe, June, end of June, but I'm not.
Yes.
2020. Okay, yep. Thank you. And then potentially a police chief might be starting October 2nd.
Awesome.
Are there any questions on?
Are you doing?
No, I'm good.
Nope.
Awesome. Great, thank you.
Thank you. David rented the bathroom, so we're going to skip him and go to discussion and action items. This is AB 23-134 MOU with Mount Rainier Athletic Club. Did you want to talk about this, John, or do you want me to?
You can. We developed an MOU. It was signed by Mount Rainier Football Club. Athletic Club. It was prepared by the city attorney, reviewed by them, and they signed. And it's for you this evening as well as for discussion and action tonight?
Yeah, I think discussion and action, specifically because they're going for a grant September 30th. So this was one of the things we wanted to kind of get moving. So that we could move forward and start discussions and whatnot. So get that going. So,
Jason, I have a question. When you have projects, whatever there might be, large projects, you have a deadline. What do you put in these? In this, like, they simply get dumped in 2 years. What? How do you write that up? What's there? There's something you call that.
Development agreements. And we've talked about a development agreement with the city attorney because this is property we own. It's really not appropriate to do a development agreement like we had initially thought, which is why the MOU was developed to lay out kind of an agreement, and then we would develop a lease that would set out all the terms.
So similar what we did with Chris Lear. I mean, granted, that was a development agreement, but he had milestones in that agreement with the city. It was tied into the purchase and sale.
And that's my concern.
So essentially,
it's done within 2 years.
Yeah. So if we did a lease, then we could put milestones in the lease that they would have to hit.
And clawback provisions if they don't hit them.
Justin, you got anything?
I think
one or two.
One or two. So I don't know if you forwarded that to them yet.
I did.
Okay,
yes.
Perfect. I figured when some of the words came back in your email that you'd seen it. So not everyone in the room is privy to that, but the council, I don't think Sherry was. Let me.
You know, by each one of your concerns?
Yeah, let me find which sent.
I don't have anything. I can look off Tom.
Okay.
Where's you going?
So this all came about, just so everybody is aware, I guess. Justin and I met yesterday. Justin had a lot of questions, and a lot of questions I cannot answer. He offered to put those into an email so that we could get them all written down, so they could be something that could be addressed or whatnot. So I think that was sent to the council last night. Doug forwarded something in regards to not a response for everything, but just like a general response for some of this stuff.
I have a quick question for John. What's the current value of the property?
That would be something we could discuss in executive session.
Okay.
So we do have the appraisal back, but it would be more appropriate that we have the executive. Since we haven't decided whether or not we're selling the property.
So we need to schedule an executive session.
If you want to talk about the price of property.
We probably need to at some point, right?
Dan and I were talking about that.
So the first thing was the zoning issue. I know it's currently zoned R5. It would need to be zoned, what was it, something other, entertainment, recreation, right? Zone, should be other zone classifications, park and rec.
That would be if we kept it in the county. The one alternative is we do a municipal purposes annexation.
Okay.
And we zone it public facilities in the city.
Okay.
Much in the same as we did with the peaking storage tank site to the public services center. Jason, you have.
I was saying if we did annex it, we couldn't sell it.
We did annex it, we could not sell it?
Because we're annexing it from the municipal purposes. So if we go with the annexation route, it can only be a lease. Because once you sell it, it's no longer for municipal purposes.
So we couldn't sell it at all?
We could sell it now.
Right, but.
And that would just be under the county. And whether or not we could use that as our part of our park system would be a whole different story.
So if we wanted to sell it 30 years from now and unannex it or take it back into the county?
Yeah, then you'd have to unannex it and take it back into the county. Okay. There is a process.
Okay.
So it's possible. Yeah.
Okay. Costing estimate. I apologize. I was out when you had your big meeting. But what are you guys estimating these costs to be?
You know, we've had discussions as it relates to what we think they're going to be. As we go through different meetings with Chris Lear, with other leaders, it changes. And I don't think we're going to have a fixed cost, or at least anywhere near a rough cost, until we begin to have some of these discussions with people that are willing to do the work. You know, that we've seen fields go in on the private side for $200,000 for a grass field. Then, you know, we see fields that are going in for $800,000, $1 million, $1.5 million, $5 million. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a massive range. We don't know who's going to do the work yet, and what kind of goodwill they're going to bring to the table. And so far, the soft commitments we have from people involve a lot of goodwill. We're counting on it.
Well, what's your all-in number?
Right now, we are working on phase one because we think that's within the next 6 to 12 months, and that's dependent on the MOU that may or may not transpire. So anything beyond that, we haven't spent a lot of detail on time.
Okay.
Just because we don't know those costs are.
And that's my big concern. If this is a $30 to $40 million undertaking, are you guys prepared for that?
You know, we haven't got to a number like that yet.
I can get you there real quick.
If it's other people's money, I'll spend it. but I like to treat this as my own, you know, and that's the way that I kind of look at this. And so, you know, we've discussed 5 raised eyebrows. We've discussed 10, and then we've skipped on through 10 to 15. And everybody seems to land around that 15 number. And it's uncomfortable for me, and it's uncomfortable for most of the people in the club. But the one guy it's not uncomfortable to seems to be okay with, okay, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this then. Ryan, I sent you some numbers over the weekend, and I hadn't heard back from Doug, so I don't want to put you on the spot necessarily. But if we brought this property in, are we still required to pay a PIP for it?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, sorry, I was thinking back to the email that you sent.
So trip. TIF is a transportation impact fee. And this is just me looking preliminary at what our city code currently states. And for a multi-purpose sport complex, as what you're trying to do, that's actually a specific line in there. And the unit cost is $14,302 per unit. And a unit is 1,000 GFA, which is gross floor area. Is that the proper terminology? I believe gross floor area. Right. So the gross floor area is the actual field use size. So an average soccer field is 81,000 square feet. That's 81 GS GFAs. You're looking at doing approximately three of those, I believe is what was originally mentioned.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's 243 GFAs, and you're looking at doing some like quarter size fields as well for the minis or something.
20 acres.
Okay. So I figured like eight quarter size fields, because again, I don't have anything, being about 192 GFAs, and then you were doing pickleball courts, which are about 800 square feet each. That was 64 GFAs. So just those three things right there was 500 gross floor area units at $14,000, which was 7.1 million. That's without the county adding on their portion of a transportation impact fee as well, which approximately would be, I would imagine, 2 to 3 million. So just 10 million alone just in impact fees.
Just so I can understand.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's my understanding is it's going to be owned by the city.
We won't be paying that.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So if the city owns it, are there traffic impact fees for a park? If the property is going to be used as a park?
We just paid that ourselves for our own field, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
Did we pay that? Oh, those costs. And that was for the field?
It's different on what the classification is. So I have a friend that's building a daycare.
The overall the near trips Costco, for the project.
And her traffic impact fee is significantly higher than the chiropractor next door because it's based on number of trips per hour and time, peak time of those trips. So if it were something like a warehouse that only operated 10 p.m. to 4 a.m., it would probably be significantly lower than a daycare that could have 100 cars coming and going, you know, between 8 and 10 o'clock and between 3 and 5 o'clock. And how the code is currently classified, that's what they base that on, that traffic impact fee on that gross floor area is how it currently reads. And I'm no expert on that, but that's, you know, that's how I was reading it. And so that's where I came up with, well, $10 million in traffic impact, that's before you even turn a shelter.
Yeah, I'm thankful to know that this has been done before in other cities. I'm sure they have traffic impact. They're at least some. I think at some point during this, as we get into the details of these agreements and get into the details of what's happening, we'll be able to look at samples from some of those other locations and find out what creativity they use to get past some of that, because I can't see a situation where, you know, we're able to generate enough money to build fields and pay $10 million in a traffic impact fee. But I would imagine that's already been solved in a couple of places and they've been creative. So I'd like to take a look and take some time to look at those.
Yeah.
We just haven't gotten there yet. You know, this is in the infant stages. Although I'll admit to you that it feels like it's September. And I know we talked a lot about this in June, so it feels like 3 months have gone by. But without any agreement, we haven't been able to really progress. So it really nothing has changed between June 7th and today.
Yeah.
Because we haven't been able to sit and agree. And I'd love to be able to say that it happened, but I feel like it's June 8th.
Well, I mean, this is a municipal project, so
yeah.
3 months might as well be 3 weeks in that sense. I mean, we've been building the last field for 7 years.
Oh, yeah. No,
So
it's on me. Registering a complaint. It's
oh, yeah. No, I'm trusting you. I love efficiency, and the government is not that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So that was my other concern. I mean, then you've got your clearing costs, permitting fees, you've got construction fees, CEPA, tribal testing, engineering, road improvements. That's why I said I can get you to $30 million real quick, because if our last field was $6.5 million, and presumably you can do it significantly cheaper. So even if it was $4 million,
just keep in mind, this is I'm sure it's a one-year MOU, right?
It is, yeah. But
and the responsibilities for MRAC is to have a qualified professional approve a site plan and come up with a detailed construction cost estimate for completing the project on the Reed property and provide the city with detailed financial information to establish MRAC has the financial ability to complete the project.
But I know our lawyers and our staff are going to, this MOU is agreed to, going to be spending time and money, yes, as well. That, yes, if we look at this today and go, well, I didn't anticipate $30 million, maybe we got to go back to the drawing board. You know, I know it's kind of the cart before the horse, but I also don't want to spend city money that we don't currently have on. Our lawyers said it could be in excess of $10,000 to do the lease agreement, which presumably would be a result of whatever comes of that. So I'm just trying to, you know, make sure that this is the best use of public money, because if we do move forward, it's not the $15,000 of lawyer's fees, it's the whatever the cost is of us buying our own property from us that, you know, has been so graciously taken from the people of this community through taxes. So I just want to be really cautious of that. And then the funding. Now, you know, I don't know how much Terry told you. I know you guys just started a corporation, a for-profit corporation, less than a year ago. Now, if there was any other company saying, hey, would you give us potentially $4 million for us to build you out this? We've been around for less than a year. I don't know that any of us would say, let's just do it without a plan. And I know the MOU is the kickoff of that plan, but all I have to go off of is the last 10 plus years of tax returns for the football club, the nonprofit. And everything in here is showing that the last 10 years, there's been an operational loss. And I know it's a not-for-profit, but still you can make profit to use for capital expenses such as this. But as the end of 2021, there was a $200,000 loan taken out and a net loss, net assets of less than 300, a net asset of negative $300,000. So, you know, when I say, how are you going to not only figure out how much it's going to cost, but how is it going to be funded? Because someone saying, I'll kick in $250,000 is not a significant enough commitment to me that says, yeah, this is, you know, where we want to go. And, you know, with knowing that you've got engineering costs, and even take engineering out, just TIP fees, city fees, permitting costs being city fees, things like that, I wouldn't feel comfortable unless there was at least all of that plus insurance and everything, you know, fully available on day one. Because how long do they have to pay the TIP fees?
Actually, looking through this, it appears per city code, where a TIF is concerned anyways, that as long as there's a public component to this development, they would not be subject to these rules.
So we didn't have to pay a TIF on our own part?
I'd have to go back and take a look, but actually, I don't think we did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's a huge hurdle.
Reduced it by like $30 million. Nice job.
Just so that we're all clear, we did have to do frontage improvement as part of that park project. Sure. So there was some additional burden there in physical improvements, but we didn't pay it.
And certainly, even if we annexed it, the county would comment during the CEPA period. And with Fresh Pond Memory, Costco, they have to pay a third of the county.
Yeah, and that's all negotiated. Right. And I don't know what that would look like with the county, because it is outside the city, so it does go directly onto a county road. So what the county would require through the CEPA process for mitigation, I don't know. Will it be their full impact fee? Will it be a percentage? Will it be some sort of, it could be just, hey, make improvements here.
Yeah.
We won't know that, nor the cost of that.
Until we start having a conversation?
No, until we actually have applications.
An application.
Okay. Yeah, until I have a traffic study and a site plan and a CEPA application that I can then give to the county, that's when that comes.
Right. Do we have to pay a TIF on, or not a TIF, a county TIF on the public workstation?
I don't know. I know we did improvements. I know Chris isn't paying any county impact fees.
Yeah, but he's fully in the city.
I mean.
Public,
you know, I don't know.
Because there's a public component to the public works, obviously. It's in the name. But it was fully in the county, so that's why
we may have been credited, because we ended up having to do engineering work to change site distance issues on the roadway.
Improvements along We had sidewalk frontage along the frontage of the Public Services Center. And then we did work down at the intersection of 214th and 96th. We had to move a signal pole, I think.
Yeah. So I don't know that we actually paid TIP, but we did have to complete specific work to their facility.
Yeah, I have a store here, which has got kind of at the corner, where it's at county and city. They didn't pay a TIP.
Okay. To the county.
To the county. And they didn't have frontage. There's actually a little gap, so they didn't have to do frontage improvements. The answer is I don't know until we have a lot,
right?
A lot more information, because the county's going to say, until I see a traffic study, I can't tell you.
Okay.
And I've been out there a lot. I think we might impact crickets and frogs, but probably not too many people. And that's the majority of the day. I've been out there at all hours.
Yeah, I'm not doubting that.
And to get back to some of the points that you made.
Yeah.
And I was smiling as you were talking. I apologize for that. But I really look forward to talking about this specifically because, you know, the look into the history and the prediction of if that history is going to tell us what may happen in the future, it's usually a good predictor. It's interesting because, you know, I've known Scott for probably more than 15 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, MRFC, the soccer club, is only one thing that he's gotten himself into. Business is his forte. He's run a number of different corporations, probably one he's most proud of, and it's maybe known for it. It's Sefinco. And if you were to look at the tax records for Sefinco, next to the tax records for MRFC, I think would be a different story.
Right, but our agreement is Sefinco. Our agreement is with the Mount Rainier Athletic Club.
Okay, fair enough. But Scott ran, he started and ran Sefinco for 25 years. And yeah. And he pretty much saved and ran MRFC for 10 years, arguably. And so, there's some balance, I think, there. And if we were to look at what happened with Sefinco, it was sold to MozTech, which is a $4 billion annual company. We know that I have no idea what the deal was, but we have an idea that there was probably some success there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and that's just one of Scott's businesses. And so when you look at those, and I have no idea what all of his businesses, but when you look at just that one example, and MRFC, you know, you can begin to balance that picture a little bit better. And it shows that on one hand, he's extremely generous to his community and he's willing to take a loss in order to support children getting use out of a space, which is a net positive for everybody. And on the other hand, you know, that was an organization that was created 20 some years ago, MRFC, and he came in the middle of it and made it what it is today, which went from five teams when he took over to now it's 50 teams plus REC plus futures. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at roughly 2,000. You know, Kathy came and she spoke about her daughter playing at MRFC and then playing later abroad in Spain. So, you know, those are things to look at that we can also measure. And so, you know, when we find that balance and we understand that Scott doesn't want to do non-for-profit with MRAC, he wants to do this as a business. And I think that, I don't know this, but I get the impression the reason that he wants to do that is because he wants to run it more like a business where he knows that it's sustainable, not just when he's involved, but it's sustainable beyond when he's involved. Mm-hmm. And he knows that the not-for-profit has taken some time to get to that point. And it's taken a lot of effort. And most soccer organizations that were nonprofit that are around this area are now gone. And the only one that remains that's in this region is MRFC. And so he understands that aspect, and he wants to keep that moving. He's obviously still very involved. Is going to be a different entity than this. He wants a lot of people to come together in this to generate activity for kids and adults that continues on for, you know, well beyond him.
And that's all great, and I completely understand that. But for me, I've got to look at a company that hasn't existed for even a year yet. You know, I don't know what they're done in Bradstreet, you know, credit score thing looks like, but, you know, all of that would come out if we sign the MOU. I just have a history of what it's going through and a presentation from him later today that's going to show a loss on our rec program, which we already know, you know, and what our loss is similar to what has been projected here. But I've got to look at, all right, well, you have maintenance and operation costs. You're going to have either some sort of loan unless this is being paid out. You're going to have investors that are probably going to get paid back on, you know, and less than $1 million in revenue. That's $50 million a year, or if I'm sorry, $50 million over a 50-year term. at a loss, it's somewhere in the, you know, net range of $75,000 or $75 million and $25 million in additional losses. Now, I don't care about the ROI. I care about the ability to maintain and operate as a future lease agreement would show. And he may have super deep pockets, but again, he's a very smart businessman. I have several businesses of his listed here. But this Washington Profit Corporation, I can promise you, has firewalls set up that completely insulate him. Something happened.
I think we can look at, you know, the goodwill of Kelly Farm. I think we all drive by that every day, mm-hmm. and we drive by a lot of other open spaces. Some of those open spaces are a little bit run down. Kelly Farm is not. Mr. Corliss is out there. He put gravel down last year. He told me what it cost. Blew my mind. He did the same thing again this year. You know, I don't know why. We didn't know he was doing it. Mm-hmm. Just all of a sudden, Corliss out there with tractors. And that just shows, you know, that just shows what somebody's willing to do if you give them an opportunity to do something amazing. And we didn't ask for it. He was up there on his property, looked down and said, "Wow, I think they need more parking. I'm just assuming this is what he thought." And then he created more parking. And so that's what we want to do. We want to create an opportunity for people to come in and be as generous as they wish to be and not restrain them as much as maybe somebody else would. And when you get a network of that happening, they seem to be competitive. And so we want to get more and more of those. Kathy's a great example. You know, yesterday I met with her. We talked briefly. I asked her if she would be able to take some of the money from her pickleball program and pay for some of this $80,000 that we're going to hire people to look into how we're going to use this property. We're going to hire the experts in architecture, geotechs, all these other people. Mm-hmm. She said, absolutely. I didn't even finish the sentence. She said, absolutely. And that just tells me that all you have to do is provide people an opportunity to be generous with what they've created, with the hope and dream that they'll be able to use that space, and they will do amazing things. And if we can keep that moving, if it was one person, I'd agree with you. But we have a multitude of people that are very successful at starting a business, knowing where it's going to go, and then replicating that. And I see that. And so just give us an opportunity. That's all I'm asking tonight. Give us an opportunity to take 120 days to show you just what we can get done in 120 days. Because so far, we've just, the reins been pulled back, and that's fine. And now, well, the horse run wild.
Well, you know? So you're willing to trade profit and for public use?
I'm willing to have meetings with you to tell you that we'll put people in a room to figure out how to do those things. And then we're going to write it all down, and we're going to give it to them. And that's going to be the plan. What they're willing to do and what I'm willing to do, two different things.
So my question, though, is why not buy the property outright?
Dale, how much?
We'll have an executive meeting and let you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I ask that because if for some reason it comes down to a 60-40 split of 60% private use, 40% public use.
Yeah.
That's 40% profit that you're not capturing. Now, I'm sure you can do the math on 40% over 50 years or even over 5 years is going to be worth the purchase price. So I know I wouldn't want to have a partner if I know that that partner's value is only going to be worth 3 years worth of, you know, my profits. If I could buy them outright ahead of time, your ROI is going to be five years minimum. So, you know.
Yeah, no, I understand that. This is a unique location. It's a beautiful location. I think that, you know, it has value because in the initial conversations, there wasn't really a plan to do anything with this property. And so that became valuable in and of itself, that we could create something of use for people. And in return, we could get people working and moving. You know, in that time in between, we've considered other options. As we approached the county, they've expressed that they have 88 acres up on Zahali. Sounds fantastic. There's also another piece of private property that's right at $1 million, just over that. I think we could probably talk to the landowner. His name is Bruce, and it's not far from this Thomas Prairie property. Mm-hmm. And it is available. It's not on the market, but it is available.
Yeah.
It had some interest for a minute, and then that kind of waned, and I think that it's back just growing hay. So we've looked at that, but
you know, and it might be in a little bit more advantageous area. It is available. Scott's expressed, hey, if this stalls, then maybe we do look at purchasing a piece of property. So, you know, there are other options. We just think this is the best one.
Well, and I don't agree that, or I don't disagree that you know, a park out there like what you guys are trying to do would be magnificent. I think it would be a lot of value added. The business side of me, the mathematician side of me, makes me wonder, why do you need us in this partnership versus buying it outright and doing your own thing? You know, I'm trying to see that aspect, because I'm going to throw a hypothetical number out there. I have no idea if this is close or not, but say that property is worth $4 million, and you guys buy that for $4 million.
If it's worth $4 million, we should sell it today. Hey, I'm not kidding. We should sell that today. Not to us. We should sell that to them.
Well, and that's the thing, because that's what I have to look at as a council member, is if we own this property as in the general fund, that's a completely different story than the conversation we're having right now. It's owned by a utility, and that utility can sell it to you, right? But that utility can't give it to, basically, we're talking two entities. Water fund is completely different from the city fund. And the only way we can make this property available to you is if the general fund takes hypothetical $4 million, pays the water fund $4 million. And then from there, we can start working with you, because we cannot work with you if it remains in the utility fund.
Okay.
So I look at that as an $8 million swing. We lose $4 million out of our general fund, and our water fund goes up $4 million. Now, we can sell that property outright to a developer, to you, the county, for that same $4 million, hypothetically. That water fund is going to be solvent no matter what. We're not out $4 million as taxpayers on that. And that's where, you know, I have the heartburn trying to decide, is that $4 million a value added for the citizens? And a sports field for public use, I would say, is absolutely.
How much was that field?
Five. Out the door, about $5 million.
$5 million. Yeah. And we get how many fields?
Three potentially, three more fields, pickleball. Like, it seems to me we've already done that easily. And this would give us exponentially more than what we've already done for way less.
And then we have the, in the county, even though it would be a annexed thing, we have now policing. Parks are predominantly known for after hour hygiene, let's say. So now we're having to, how would we offset that, as well as what would the security measures be, so that we're not having to go out there all the time? Because we will. I mean, an open field, the skate park where we have it, tennis courts, all of that, that's our highest call volume outside of apartments after hours. So
I feel like this is my wheelhouse.
I know. This is you.
I've been waiting for this question. Well, you know, number one, we're currently at Game Farm Park. And that's an interesting
situation. Yeah.
And so,
you have armed security out there?
No. Well, I mean.
Maybe.
Yeah, people are armed with the knowledge of the areas. the city of Auburn made a budget decision to remove the security guy that they had that was out there about 2 years ago. And we have, I've contacted some of my friends in law enforcement and said, hey, is there something we can do? Who do we hire? How do we get somebody out there? And we've considered just covering the costs. So that's one thing. When the box that I installed, I was given permission to install, was graffitied, I went out there, went to Home Depot, and it was in the middle of the aisle with all the automotive stuff, and they have graffiti remover. I bought a bottle of that and some thick gloves and a couple of rags, and I went out there and removed the graffiti. And then the next day, they called and said, hey, who took that graffiti off? I was like, you don't have to worry about that. It's just know that the graffiti is gone. Mm-hmm. So they were happy. They didn't have to do anything, hire somebody to go and do a study to figure out how to remove graffiti.
Which then would have happened.
Right. I was laughing because it's true. And so, you know, it was gone. So we handled that.
Kelly Farm, great example. You know, huge open space, not a lot of, we say there's been a little bit of vandalism out there. We see it. We talk to Corliss about it. He gets frustrated and we work to help him to fix it and then to make it better. And so, you know, Kelly Farm, I think, is a great example of, to look and see what's going on out there. I personally installed some motion activated solar lights out there. So, you know, if somebody does walk by, and usually we just capture an elk and deer, you know, we get a little bit of a notification if somebody's looking out there into the dark, hey, something's going on. Yeah. The shed's been broken into for the padlock. It wasn't broken into for a number of years. And so, you know, but the benefit we have out there is number one, there are neighborhoods all around that thing. And they seem to be pretty well versed in it. Somebody about 2 months ago pushed through the gates at the Quality Lake Estates, caused a lot of damage at the gate, drove in and stole some things from a house that's under construction. The entire neighborhood, I was out walking through that neighborhood the next night, and three people with flashlights confronted us. From, you know, 1,000 feet away. It was amazing. I was like, this community is on top of it. So, you know, we have the benefit of that. And then we have to look at, what if we, you guys love this question, what if we don't do anything out there? You know, the amount of things that can happen, every time I go out there, it seems like something else is broken into, a door's wrecked, windows are popped, there's some new graffiti, it looks like it's on the inside. There's no use out there. And so with that lack of use, I think that more people feel bold enough to go in and do things. You know, the 6 and 7 and 8 year old kids that are out there now are soon to be 9, 10, and 11. And that curiosity is going to go beyond their yards. And it's going to go into that field. And if it's not being occupied, if it's not being used, if there's not somebody out there at least every day looking at it and using it, then what about those questions? So I think that we add to the security potential out there because we're going to be present many times, even in the build out, even in some of the surveying, we're going to have that presence out there. And I think the presence is one of the biggest deterrents for illicit behavior, for, you know, unwanted behavior.
Yeah. I have a quick question. Are you still going to use Kelly Farms area too? Why you're leaving that area, so I have to go out there.
Yeah, we're going to keep our recreational program at Kelly Farm. It seems to be where Futures does the best, the little 3 to 7 year olds.
I see that all the time.
Oh, yeah. And it seems to be where everybody wants to come to play a community sport. So we're going to keep that where it is. But we also know that Corliss, you know, we don't know what it's going to be. We don't know if it's going to be there for, you know, a month, a year, 100 years. You know, if he stops riding motorcycles, he might be out of it. We don't know. He still runs. So, you know, we just want to look down the road and not get to the point where we're like, uh-oh, he's gone. What do we do now? And we also realize that there's a lot of people moving into this area. You know, the area of Buckley, I don't know how they can build a new house, but they've done it, and it's amazing. And so as that area grows and as farms turn into housing communities, we see even more of them. It's growing.
And where are you pulling from now? All your people, your kids are not there.
Yeah. You know, they had a saturation map. I think they've updated it within the last 18 months. You know, we're pulling some kids as far as the north part of Auburn and Kent. Some of the kids that can drive are coming from Tacoma. It just depends. Every year we have tryouts. We'll lose a couple of kids here. We'll gain a couple of kids over there. I know there's one player up in Maple Valley. Boarding, we had a whole team coming from the wing. So it really depends on the formation of teams, where kids are moving, where their parents are moving, and how we bring them.
And how will people register in the future using the way the facilities out there, such as Delta Games and stuff too, that would be on the weekend? Do you have someone out there all the time, or do you do it online? How do they have access to the field?
You know, we invest in this powerful tool about a year ago. Through the soccer organization, through a member of the football club called Playmetrics. And then I was involved in that selection. We had looked at four different online products. And that product specifically was designed to be all-inclusive. It does everything. It allows us to chat. It keeps the chat so that we're able to document what's been said between players or coaches or parents. It allows us to schedule. It allows us to alert, hey, there's lightning in the area, clear out. It allows us to shut down fields, open up fields, change schedules, let everybody know what's going on. It, out of the four we looked at, it definitely is the most powerful. And it has, it's a one-stop. Once you figure out how to use it, we can program all kinds of things out there. That's one of the things that pickleball, I think, was fond of. That's one of the things that Angelo with rugby is fond of, is that we have that those types of tools so we don't have to duplicate the effort. We made the investment so that we know as we grow, we can just add on. Because that's a company that it's based on the number of athletes that you have registered. That's how they determine the cost. And so as our group grows, we can continue to pay for that. And it's not going to be a massive investment every year. So that scheduling aspect of it, we have the software. We have the people that know how to use it. They've lived through some experiences to figure out where the mistakes can be made. And now we feel like we own that portion so that we can schedule things. That way we can be efficient, have the right people out there at the right times. And that's something that Kathy said. You know, they want to create a situation where scheduling is happening. People are in there, they're not waiting around to play. And we are very confident because of the way that it's lined out. They can go in and say, this space holds four people. Got it. Okay. So we can only schedule four people in that space. So you have X number of spaces for 60 minutes. Great. They can only have this number of people in that space. And it allows for people to self-assign. So we do feel we have the tools in order to be efficient.
Well, and I know we still have a whole other presentation. So, and I've got a lot of questions. I know I'm not going to be able to get to tonight. We have a mutual friend who spoke extremely highly of you, and I want you to know this. None of this is personal. It's just me doing my due diligence.
Well,
hope at the end of the day here we still end in a handshake. I can't approve this for going on. I don't know how it'll move. This is not a no. I'm just not comfortable enough yet with the answers that I'm giving. And again, I'm 107, so I could easily be bypassed through this whole thing. But that's just, if this were owned already by the city and not the utility, completely different story. But I personally think if buying it is an option, I'd much rather put this on hold for a while and we just briefly, because I think we have estimates already of the valuation. Maybe we pursue at least another, not necessarily another path, but give you another option for success in that. So
I know I'm not going to convince you.
I know,
and that's fine. But I would encourage us to move forward with the MOU so that everybody can talk and get some of these questions answered. And then if it turns out that it is the best thing to do, then we cut bait and, you know, everybody goes their separate ways and we can certainly do that. But I think we should go through the process. This is an awesome opportunity and these opportunities don't come around often enough for us to just turn it down.
Well, we need this in a body way.
Absolutely.
You know, I've been for 12 years, I'm trying to get Midtown Park someplace.
Oh, I love it.
I've been pushing it and this is how far we've gotten. It's been a challenge. It's like I'm climbing a mountain, I'm still at the bottom pulling my rope, you know, and I need to get it done. And I'm very disappointed we haven't gotten there yet. So if this can help start getting something going forward, then I'm for this. But the challenges we're going to face, but we need to see what you can accomplish. The money may not be there in the past history, but you do have a person who has some deep pockets to help keep it going. Hopefully he's got supporters around him to help make it happen too.
A lot of friends.
Yes, and that makes a big difference because I spoke to another person just recently, and all these parks, these things that happen, they're put together by someone with some deep pockets. You know, you look at the Senate and Sumner, what the city paid for that. You know, that was all paid for, some deep pockets down there put together. And we probably need the same thing to happen in Midtown Park. Maybe if someone would help us, I've got $10 million for you, put my name on it. Let's build something. That's what's going to take it to happen. So if this can help get us going the right direction, then I'm all in favor of that because I don't like that parks empty over there. Too many students have told me they have no place to go after school. They have nothing to be able to do. And we have done nothing for them in the city at all. They've got parks going out of their ears in Sumner, new parks going right and left, doing parks in Buckley. The Vaughan Lake has nothing. we need to have get something going forward to it. I'm real hesitant, as Jasmine has talked about more, but I want to see something going on forward to it. So,
Do you know how much that hub was that you sent the rendering of?
Oh man, Bill out there, I need to catch up on a conversation with him. That guy, he said the funniest thing to me, and I'll answer your question, but he said the funniest thing to me the first time he spoke. He goes, everybody says it's a great idea, but nobody wants to pay for it. And that has stuck with me. And he goes, but we still are finding a way. And I love that. He's going to be at about $15 million.
Okay, and that's fully private?
It is fully private.
Okay.
Yes. They had a person from their church buy the 20 acres around them. They were on a 6-acre parcel. Mm-hmm. They had been for about 10, 15 years.
Okay.
And then he bought the 20 acres around them, and then they found investment in order to get where they're going. He has a very similar plan to what we do.
Okay.
Grants heavy, personal commitments, goodwill, and goodwill.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Maybe just have to move real quickly. 4.2.1, the city's responsibilities is crafted so it's bringing forward for council consideration to transfer the Reed property from the water utility into the general fund. You could make an amendment that adds 4.2.1G at the bottom of that. And or an outright sale, purchase and sale agreement.
Good idea.
Yeah, so right now it's crafted towards a long-term lease agreement,
right?
Transferring it from water to general fund. We could craft a G, if you will, that just gives you an option of an outright sale.
And I guess the question is that something that would get you to?
It helps, but it's,
yeah,
I'd rather, yeah.
Alone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Were you wanting us to see if we could do an executive session or not? I think the attorney isn't here.
The attorney's not here and Sam's on vacation. So I don't know whether we can legally do an executive session without doing a prior announcement and what that prior announcement time frame is.
Okay. I was getting the.
I mean, I know it's. It?
Yes, I was. But if we can't do it, that's fine. We can probably set one up for
next week.
Right. Right. Yeah. That works. Okay. Good? All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Wells, recreation program.
We're going to try to make money. We're going to try not to lose money. And we're going to do the best we can. Okay. Next meeting.
Awesome.
So one of the questions after the last meeting was the long sheet, which really shows where... You guys want one, Danny?
Thank you. And to be fair, I wanted all this too, so I wasn't just picking on
you. I trust you're consistent.
Who else needs one down there?
Guys, on.
So, because I know a bunch of you are going to skip over to the right, which is 2014. The very last line is our best guesstimate for next year. I'll be honest, on the expenses, we have been a little liberal, and on the revenues, we've been a little conservative, because I would rather have a best guesstimate and then end up with more revenue than we anticipated. Then the lines next to that are how we've broken it down by each quarter. And so down at the very bottom, it shows what percentage right now we're best guesstimating that we're going to have for our current return based on just user fees. So in the fall of next year, we're looking at almost an 81% return rate, and spring being the lowest at a 75% return rate. And then I mentioned before when I talked with the director of Maple Valley, their 2022 numbers was a 59% for everything. Staff fees and the rentals expenses and all that.
Yeah, 70, it's a great recovery.
So this is our starting point from our perspective right now, and our goal is obviously to get as close to the 100 as we can, but knowing that one of the largest hurdles is what our staff fees are costing. And after working with Sherry, we're looking about $440,000, $450,000 for next year for staff fees. So that's just right off the top. We know we're going to be paying that with a three full-time staff. In the original budget, we had scheduled, we had 4 total staff. So we're dropping that down to 3. So we'll drop off 1 of the recreation coordinators. And then we're also have already brought on some of the site directors to be referees and building supervisors. So those staff that want to continue working for the city will have some opportunity. They'll be able to work at a lower rate than what they were getting as a site director, but it'll be less than what our current rec staff are getting for opening and closing a building. And so as part of that, we're also going through, and the reason I gave you the 2 My Bonnie Lakes is the one in the bright blue is this fall, and this is what we are currently running with the 3 full-time staff. We're also now starting to work on the winter for January. One of the things that we're doing internally is going through and looking at every program that we've offered and seeing, one, can we do this with the 3 staff and the seasonal help, or do we need to put this one aside? And so every program that is in these brochures is going through review to see what we're getting for a cost recovery, how much staff time is it actually taking in comparison. And so that way we have a really good idea of, is it going to be as profitable as we can possibly make it?
Are you talking that classes aren't being attended?
No, it's more of, for instance, we had a safe sitter class, which we've offered over the years, and it will, some years it'll have a very high number of people that want to register. And then other years, it won't have but 1 or 2 people register. When it has the low numbers, we cancel. But part of looking at that is also which staff member can we have to run that program, because it needs somebody that can open and close the building. And then part of the agreement with the school district is we will do the custodial, so that way we don't have to pay the extra fee from the school district for custodians and for building monitors. And then additionally, what we're looking at too is the staff are constantly talking with people in the community, what programs do you want to see? So we can evaluate those and see what we can do. For instance, this summer, one of the community members wanted to do a community orchestra. Initially, that sounds like a great idea because they're willing to donate their time, but we didn't have anybody that could open and close the building on a regular occasion to have that class. And so as we look internally to be able to provide a program, we decided to wait and postpone it until next summer to try to find somebody that can help either from the school or internally as a seasonal employee that we can have open and close a program. So each new program, we're really going through, figure out what we can do to make it as profitable as possible. On our big sheet that Sherry really doesn't want to see,
it's not that I don't want to see it, it's that I have no way of verifying your number.
Right.
Deputy Mayor, you have 5 minutes.
5 minutes? Thank you.
So we have nearly 100 programs that we offer. And now granted, when you look at this, we have like middle school, after school soccer. It's listed as one program, but we have it at every school. So of those nearly 80 programs, less than about 12% of them are operating under 25% cost recovery. Everything else is anywhere from 30 up to, there's a couple programs we do that we get 100% because we don't have expenses for them.
Still can't do digital payment?
We cannot. Part of that is tied with the Tyler, and when we've last couple of times when we've gone to try to get the Tyler Parks and Rec up and running, we've had another staff member quit. And so now it's, we're trying to get by with the three staff and figure out how we could get through summer with the less staff. And so we will have to start looking at seeing how we can get that all on board. Because part of it is with the way the TPAR program works is we need to be able to put every single entity into the software.
We have the ability, we just aren't set up for it through recreation.
Correct.
Yeah.
Is it a paid service?
Yes.
That we're not using?
Yes.
And then the other thing is, how are the participant feedbacks coming?
I occasionally get emails that are coming back really good. We haven't taken the staff time to do a Survey Monkey because, again, for the whole last 3 months, they have been short staff.
So the part, not the participants, but the kung fu and the karate, they're not, for their contract handing out participation things being turned over to us?
Correct. And now that things are settling down and we're getting into a fall with the three staff of that VNA, we can start working on adding those features into what we're doing. But going into a summer with programs expecting four full-time staff and then having three, a little tough on staff, as well as not knowing if they were having a job in 2 months.
Any other questions?
I spoke to City Sun about concern whether reservation were before, and they said it just didn't make sense for us. That's what we talked out, but we just couldn't afford to do it. That's what the city took to Bonnie to take care of, and that's the problem we're facing now. Because they saw the problems you're facing, and you know, it's a tough program to make happen, make work. So if he can make it happen, that's fine, but if he doesn't, it's going to have to go away.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
All right. I don't think we're going to have time for open discussions. We have to go straight to our meeting. So, call us adjourned.
All right.